Almost forgot. We're sitting there having such a good time talking. All these ideas are flowing around. The show's getting started. Next thing you know, it's like, wait a minute. Here we are. We're already here. Yep, Fish and Frank here in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me and RJ in the command center. Lots of cool stuff going on. Let's get right to a little bit of fishing because there's some talk that they're going to shut down shark fishing from the beach. This is something that's been bouncing back and forth with FWC. We've got these going to be updates all through the show. But one of the things they're talking about is shark fishing off the beach. They're going to be shutting that down. That's been a big topic for a while now, right, Robert?
Yeah, it's actually, it's kind of a well-deserved topic, to be honest with you. I mean, it's that age group at, you know, 20-something years old where we all screwed up a lot, and it only takes one or two people to kind of mess it up for everybody, unfortunately, because there's a lot of really, really good people out there. But you can only leave a mess on the beach.
What he's trying to get to is one of the things these guys do, they take great big reels and rods out to the beach, and a lot of these guys are putting out 2, 3 to 15 rods, and they've got all these lines out there. They take a kayak or small vessel out there to the beach, and they put a big chunk of bait on with a weight, and they kayak it out several hundred feet off the beach. They put chum out there. They do all this. And then they're trying to catch and bring back to land 8-foot, 6-foot, 10-foot, 20-foot sharks, whatever they can find.
Yeah.
But they're looking for stuff more than 6-foot. So 10, 12 foot is really a very thrilling catch. And it's them on the beach trying not to be dragged into the water and bringing the sharks up. But it's when they bring the sharks up to the beach is the first part of the controversy.
Yeah.
As they're bringing those sharks up, they're coming in very shallow with the sharks, sometimes up on land, which fish, sharks, stuff like that are not really meant to be on solid ground. It can collapse the ribs,
the intestines, everything.
It can really do some damage to the sharks. If they're kept where their belly is not collapsed onto the water, onto the ground, it's really not hurting the fish at all.
Right.
And some of the guys are really good. Now, can you imagine? It's 1 o'clock in the morning. It's pitch black. And you're out there standing in 3-4 feet of water with a 12-foot hammerhead that you have a hold of.
It's pretty exhilarating, honestly.
I mean, you literally got your hands, and somebody's holding the tail, somebody else grabs them by the side of the head, and they're walking, trying to get hooks out, they're doing all this while the fish is alive, and they're out there in the water with this fish.
Yeah.
And then when it's all done, they walk them back out into the water. I mean, bare legs. They're walking out there with a 10-foot, 12-foot shark, 8-foot shark, and literally walking him back out to resuscitate him so that he can swim off.
No, it's pretty scary, actually.
I mean, I don't
know. It's adrenaline at its finest.
But to me, I would be puckered up so bad you couldn't drive a stick pin up there with a sledgehammer. You know,
I agree with you.
It's not my cup of tea, but I understand. I'm not one that's going to jump off of mountains and climb up the face of a cliff. I'm not an adrenaline junkie.
Well, I knew a guy that used to do that kind of shark fishing. His nickname was Stumpy.
Stumpy, yeah. Actually, I don't know that there's ever been a recorded accident of any major degree with somebody land-based shark fishing getting bit, mutilated to more than minor.
I think it's the smaller sharks that are more likely to spin around and bite you. The bigger guys, because you tire them out because they fight for so long, those fish are pretty much had it at that point. And like you say, you're going to resuscitate them, and the first thing on that animal's mind is, I got to get out of here.
Let me get out of here, yeah.
Yeah, so, no, I'll agree with you on that.
So while I don't To date, I don't know of a documented case of somebody having a leg bit off or part of their abdomen missing or hands or arms or anything. It will happen one day. That's inevitable. But in the meantime, when we're going to talk about what we're talking about, it has nothing to do with shark fishing from the beach. The thing that happens is, if you're out there with just a normal spinning rod and you're casting out into the Gulf from the beach somewhere and you happen to catch like a bonnet shark or a black tip, that is not the same thing as shark fishing from the beach.
No.
Because what's happened with the guys shark fishing from the beach, people think they're hurting the animals, which is true and is not true, depending on the group that's doing it. But the biggest thing and complaint is the mess they leave on the beach. Number one, hands down, garbage, dead bait, fishing line, just trash. Everything. From them going out, they spend all night, they do a little drinking, a little partying, or just hanging out. And many of the groups leave the beach a mess. And this is just where the whole point of contention started. They're loud, they're playing music, they're doing this, they're doing that. And there is so many of the groups out there, and they outnumber the bad ones, probably 4-1. They go out there, they have a nice quiet time on the beach, they get a couple lines out, they catch their fish, they handle them well, release them, clean up everything, and the beach is better than when they got there. There's more stuff picked up, the beach is nicer conditions. But as always, everybody focuses in on the bad ones, the ones who go out there, and there's cans and bottles and paper and whatever else, fishing line and all this stuff, old dead bait left on the beach. They've trashed the beach. And this is a very small percentage of the people doing this, but it's turned into a big problem. But this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about going out to the beach right now along the Gulf of Mexico because it's really cool. And you can stand right on land. And if you cast a shrimp out, what shark would you catch, Robert?
Bonnethead. Bonnethead sharks are definitely out along the beaches right now, and shrimp are their primary food source. You know, they're one of the few sharks that almost exclusively feed on crustaceans as their normal food source.
I've caught literally thousands of bonnet sharks, and I can think of 4 or 5 that I caught with fish as bait.
Right, and I was with you for a couple of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's so unusual that if you have a piece of sardine out to get a bonnet shark, it's literally an amazing thing. You're literally like, wow, what just happened? Because if you put shrimp down by the bottom, a bonnet shark could be called a shovel-nose shark, could be called a mini hammerhead, because it indirectly kind of along the same lines as a hammerhead.
Well, it's in the same, it's actually a cousin
of a species of hammerhead.
Yeah, it's a species of hammerhead.
So it is a species of hammerhead. They're very cool to catch. They're quite edible as a fish. Now, I will tell you, many people really love them. Me, personally, I'm not big on this. I don't really like the flavor of sea trout, and I don't like the flavor of bonnet sharks. But now millions of people love the flavor of sea trout and love the flavor of bonnet sharks. Me, very edible fish, but I'm not big on the flavor. I think it's because of the shrimp. When you have a primary diet of shrimp, you're going to have a little more bitter flavor to the meat.
The iodine.
It's going to be a little more bitter taste. It's just slightly different. Where me, I like eating black tips, Atlantic sharp nose, black nose. These sharks, I think, are the best eating on the planet. But right now, if you go out to the beach and you throw out some shrimp on the bottom, you're very likely to catch a bonnet shark. If you want to catch the black tip, black nose, sharp nose, you're going to use a bobber and or free line, but I prefer a bobber, making as long as I can cast, but from the bobber down to my hook. And that's usually between 3 and 4 feet. Yes. You really, you know, from the tip of your rod, and you zing the float out there, half a sardine on it, half of a thread fin, bait fish of some kind, even a chunk of mullet. But keeping in mind, these sharks are averaging about maybe 3 foot long.
Yeah, on the high side.
Absolutely. On the high side. 2 to 3 foot is probably going to be your average bonnet or black tip, sharp nose, whatever. And the really if you think you got a black tip shark, the easiest way to tell if it is a black tip is when you look at the anal fin, the one right by his anus, that's white. There is no black on the anal fin of a black tip.
Correct.
Almost all the other species have a black tip by the anal opening.
Yeah.
How's except that for the a black name? Tip.
Yeah. Makes no sense, does it?
So, there's a weird one for you, but you're literally checking his butt to figure out what he is. But when you're there under the bobber with a piece of fish, mm-hmm. you're much more likely to catch those type of sharks. A bonnet shark can actually lay on the bottom still. He does not have to move around. So he goes through the bottom, shrimp, crustaceans, and as I know for a fact, bait fish and stuff like that. But they really like going after the shrimp. Whereas the black tips, sharp nose, black nose, they've got to keep moving. They cannot be still. So they're going to be swimming all the time. So a bait suspended in the water, you're much more likely to hit one of those fish and or one of those sharks. And they eat more fish. They don't really hit on shrimp very well at all. I've caught a few on shrimp, but it's kind of like catching a bonnet shark on a piece of bait fish. It's very rare.
Right, exactly. Every animal has its own specialized food source, and almost all of our sharks that we have in Southwest Florida are what they call requiem sharks, which falls in the fish-eating category. You know, we don't have great whites here that feed on mammals, you know, so all of ours are primarily fish feeders. Your nurse shark and your bonnethead are the two species that literally 90% of their diet is crustaceans of some kind.
So, but a lot of cool shark fishing going on. It's just getting started. And this is a direct result of the sunshine we've had. The water is getting warmer. And like a lot of the tourists, they are coming back to enjoy the fine Florida weather that we have here.
Oh, it's amazing out there right now. It's actually, it feels like May. It's
so,
pretty crazy.
Whether you're going, I would say, from Manasota Beach, maybe up by Venice, but it's still a little cooler as you get that far north. But from Manasota or so, all the way down to Captiva, you got some nice shark fishing right off the beach for these 2-3 footers. They're a lot of fun. Regular spinning tackle, 10 to 20 pound, medium heavy, 10 to 20 pound braided line. My favorite leader for these is the AFW bleeding leaders. I use 4-0, 5-0, or 6-0. I bend the barb down on the shank. I do not like circle hooks on the shark. I can't get them out. It's too dangerous. So I use the AFW bleeding bait leaders. They're steel leader like a snelled hook. They got a swivel on one end, hook on the other. They're red. And I take my pliers and very carefully round the barb on the hook so that if I take my finger through, it won't catch on the barb. But I want to leave a bump there. And that bump helps keep the bait on, and it keeps the shark on. You don't need the pointy barb. You just need a little bit of a bump there. And, you know, you could do it with tiny rubber bands. Put your bait on, put a tiny rubber band on there. But it's just easy to take your time with a pair of pliers. And that AFW rig has a very, very pronounced barb on it. And you can grab it right by the tip and roll it back to the shank. And then when you get the fish up, you simply, little tug on the hook, pops right out. And I've never lost a fish because I've done that.
No, if you got a little bit of pressure on it at all times, you definitely are never going to lose the fish. Yeah. And even with people that are inexperienced with it that bounce the rod, still very much land them successfully. You've ran charters for years catching those
fish. Yeah, I made a lot of money catching these fish.
Flattening out the barbs, and the fish stay right on. Now, the other cool part is you're talking about using a J-hook versus a circle hook. Now, from my own personal experience with shark fishing is I don't like circle hooks either. The number one thing that I have found, though, is when you are freelining it or fishing it under a bobber, it almost acts exactly like a circle hook. It'll almost always hook them in the roof or the corner of the mouth.
Oh, the AFW hooks, yeah.
Yeah. So
they're really good that way.
Just a J hook, when it's suspended in the water column, those fish very seldom get hooked anywhere else but that corner or roof of their mouth, so it's
And
easy
it's so easy without
with.
The barb to get them out.
Absolutely.
And if you have to cut the leader because the shark is too big and you cannot safely handle it, it's a very simple matter of cutting it And a lot of times you can just hold the line, take something, and hit the hook, and it'll just pop right out. Without the barb to hold it in place, it just falls out. It's really cool. And if you do have to cut it, chances are the shark will work it out, and he'll be able to spit it out. It's really a nice way to go with that. Much better than the Econut circle hook thing. So, but, you know, there's a place for everything and how you do it and what you don't do it. But if you're going to use circle hooks on sharks, make sure you bring bolt cutters with you, because you're going to end up cutting those hooks in half a lot.
Absolutely.
So, Robert, you went on vacation.
Yeah.
You had a little mini-cation.
Wait, he had a vacation?
This guy, he actually gets 2 days off a week. Yeah, I know. You and I don't relate at all.
Yeah, it made no sense to me. Two days off in a week? What two days would that be?
You guys are the ones
one
that decided
the
to
other,
be bosses.
And I don't even conceive of that anymore. Two days in a row of not being... Oh, never mind. Go ahead, Robert. You had a vacation.
You guys decided to be bosses. That's self-inflicted wound. Yeah, we went to the other coast for basically 2 days, a day and a half.
Hi, Christina.
We went to try to catch peacock bass, and we hit several canals in the Lauderdale area and then went up to, Boca Raton and Fort Walton Beach area to Lake Osborne.
Fort Walton Beach is way up in Panhandle.
Okay, not Fort Walton. It doesn't matter either. It
doesn't matter. It's a little town over
there. By Boca Raton. And,
you can't tell one town from the next because
the only way you
know you're in another town is there was a sign that says, welcome to, you're leaving.
Yeah. The went to Lake Osborne, which is where there's a lot of peacock bass and clown knife fish, even pakus, which is funny because the world record paku and clown knife, which are both non-native fish, come from that lake. That chain area. You know, the clown knife's from India, the paku's from South America, but hey, we got big ones here.
The paku is a form of piranha, but it has more blunted teeth. It doesn't have the triangular shaped teeth. We have one on the wall, a small one, at Fish and Frank's that I caught years ago. And we do have those in Charlotte County and Sarasota County, but they're in lesser numbers because every 10 or 12 years when we get that freeze happens, it knocks the population back. They like the warmer water.
Right.
We've never actually lost them. There's probably peacock bass here, one or two here or there, and as well as several other fish that we don't think of, but they're in so small numbers, they're probably in some little pond or lake or canal that's very deep.
Yeah,
because they would
have to be deep.
20 feet of water to survive that freezing here. But
which is why they're so successful of a fish down in the southern part and on the east coast, because they've got those deep...
So what did you take to go catch these fish?
Shiners was our main bait, but we also took some fire tiger colored and perch colored crankbaits and topwater baits, because those canals are pretty deep down there. We did take a couple soft plastics, which we didn't bother using. Because never thought about it. But the coolest part is you know, it's always neat to go to a different area and try to learn it in a very short period of time and hope to be successful.
Did you hear the translation on that, RJ?
Didn't catch any fish.
Didn't catch any fish.
It's really good to be able to go and learn a new area.
Yep.
You know, and when you hear those
words. I saw that one
coming. Yeah, when you hear those words. Yeah. Goose egg.
Yep.
Okay.
It happens, but the good part was that we still had an enjoyable time, because there are times where you go fishing no matter where you're at, and just it frustrates you and you get aggravated and you just leave feeling very beat up. And I was a little disappointed, but the quality time that we had and learning the new area, seeing some different stuff, we got to see a lot of iguanas, a couple different species of iguanas, a couple other lizards, which I'm a reptile nut, and she enjoyed seeing that because she's never seen big iguanas. These are like 4-foot green iguanas, true 4-foot iguanas. It's fun to do all that and to drive around in a completely different area. You're urban fishing. I mean, everywhere you are fishing is homes and high-rise buildings. I mean, you're stopping on the side of the road, driving through a neighborhood, fishing some of these different canal systems. It's truly urban fishing. One of the first spots we stopped at was about 5 minutes from the hotel, was behind the Hard Rock Casino.
Oh, yeah, behind the
Hard Rock. There's a small park back there that we went and fished a little bit. Saw some fish.
I'd even throw a plug in for the Hard Rock. That's a great hotel.
They're building the guitar-shaped part of the building to it now. It's pretty
wild.
Yeah,
they were doing that last time we were there. Terry and I go to the Hard Rock, you know, not often, but we've been there several times, and, you know, they run a great place.
I got to say this one thing. You know, we make fun of our different counties that we tend to live in because of the parks and rec or some of the different ways that taxpayers' money is totally blown on stupid things. That Lake Osborne Park is by far one of the most spectacular, well-utilized, amazing use of the taxpayers' money. I mean, it's huge.
There's massive parking lot, beautiful boat ramps, nice walkout piers, places to go by the bridges, nice picnic areas.
It's gorgeous. There's got to be easily 30 to 50 acres of just grass areas to do things. There's a dog park there. There's soccer fields.
Yeah,
I mean,
really
it's
cool.
Unbelievable. So even if the fishing is not great, there's so many other things to do around that area. It was really pleasant to see.
So you
that.
Left here on a Sunday. You were back
Monday night. Yeah, and we stopped on our way back. We cut across Alligator Alley and fished the canals there. The one saving grace that made me feel a little bit better about getting beat up and not catching anything is that stopping along the way, we ran into a lot of anglers that are fishing those canals along Alligator Alley. Every one of them were saying they were not catching anything, including Oscars. There was a lot of people fishing for Oscars. One guy in a boat came back, him and his wife.
So misery loves company.
They caught 10 of them.
So misery loves company.
Absolutely.
Okay. I suck. I can't catch fish, and neither can anybody else, I don't suck so bad.
Well, and me personally, I believe that the fish gods genuinely don't like me because I have a very difficult time going out on my own catching fish.
You and I are in the same boat. Two of the best teachers of fishing on the planet, and both of us are having a hard time catching fish lately.
Yeah.
And I have a story that makes you seem like hero. You're literally like Batman and Superman rolled into one compared to what I did. All right. Cobia, what's going on
with
Cobia?
You're not going to elaborate on that.
What's going on
wait,
with Cobia?
Wait, I want to ask a question about Oscars. Are they eating the Oscars?
Yeah.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah.
So they've got to be a fairly good-sized fish.
Well,
yeah,
good.
Same as the tilapia, the Mayan cichlids, the wapotes, and...
And none of them have a bag limit on it, so, I mean, you can keep...
Wherever you want.
Those guys will go down there and catch 50 to 100 Oscars at a time.
Oscars was what saved the Everglades. The fish camps were going out of business. Tourism was down to nothing because the native fish had pretty much gone away due to stupid government regulations. If you were in the Everglades and you were drinking a bottle of water and dumped the last little bit into the Everglades, you could be fined for polluting. For some reason or other, the federal government has got a water quality regulation. That's the whole reason they can't let the Okeechobee water run down there. The Everglades was nature's filter. Water would go through there, be filtered out, end up clean water going out towards the Gulf. And the further it went through the glades, the cleaner it was. But that's what kept that end of Florida nice, and that's why the Everglades were so populated with fish. When everybody died in the hurricane, they counted for 1,600 people dead. They figure it was actually somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500 people died in that hurricane. They built the big dam around Okeechobee, the dike, the wall, whatever it is. They dug the canals in the glades to drain them. And that's why everything's the way it is, because literally somewhere between 1,500 and 3,500 people died on that hurricane. They didn't want that to happen again. So gut reaction, fix all this. Well, the canals work great. They drain the glades, but the government put a regulation when they wanted to fix it so clean, you can't run any water into the glades. We need to remove that one government regulation and we can start fixing things. You don't fill the canals in. You build a berm around them. That way the water can come up. As it gets so high, it just goes in the canals and goes away. You don't build a bridge from Naples to Miami. It's stupid. It's government lunacy. A few ditches going south from, you know, the bottom end of Okeechobee, fill them with native grass that acts like filters, or even duckweed, which can be sold as cattle feed, and the oil can be from the duckweed can be sold as diesel fuel. So brilliant plant that has a lot of uses, an amazing filter, and all that water could be going down there clean, processed out. All you have to do is dredge out a couple lakes. It's no big deal. This is not take a rocket science to figure out. The only reason it's not being done is a lot of eco-idiots. They want everything magically and instantly, you know, it, never mind. But cobia, inside or outside?
Both.
Really?
Yeah. I'm hearing a lot of good reports. I'm hearing of better numbers and quality of size offshore. Just about any of the reefs that people are stopping at the offshore from 3 miles out to 30 miles out are having cobia swimming around or coming up to the boat or hooking them as incidental bycatch while flatlining out the back of the boat. But also getting good reports of cobia inside. Guys are seeing them. They're seeing them on the outside edge of the east side of the harbor, a little bit on the west wall. You know, and now, it's been incidental catches, but they are seeing them.
There's about 8 boats at the Cape Hayes Reef. There were several boats out at the Alligator Creek Reef. Now, if I was on one of those boats, I would have a very small bobber, probably green or maybe even a clear casting bubble, with a bait about 18 inches below the bobber. A shrimp, white bait, pinfish, crab, whatever. I would not have it far below the bobber. I'd have it pretty darn close to the surface. And while I'm fishing the bottom for snappers, sheephead, whiting, whatever they're catching down there, keep that one line out there, very close to the surface, you know, and that's the one that cobia is going to go after. And once you cast it out, leave the bail open, go to the end of the rod, and make about 20, 25 pulls a line off of there so it can get out away from the boat. Because you're making that noise, you're bottom fishing, you're walking around in the boat, you're reeling, you're landing fish, you're doing whatever. Those cobia are going to be out there, I would say, 50 to 100 feet away from the boat. More than you're really going to be able to cast to them. But if you got that one line drifting off out there, just in, sitting in the rod holder, there you go.
Yeah, except for I'm going to go one step further. I'm going to put also one rod literally 18 inches below the bottom of the boat. Right
yeah,
the back
right
corner.
In the rod holder, right below the boat.
Yeah, because there's a lot of times where they'll just swim around and just show up and come up and sit right underneath your boat.
It takes calm day and bright sunshine.
Which
if
has
it's
been
rough,
happening
they won't do
lately.
It. But if it's calm and really, really sunny, they're going to lay in the shade under your boat.
Absolutely.
And they'll be within a foot of the bottom. So you don't want the bait all the way down. You only want it to be about 6 inches to a foot below the draft level of your boat. So if your boat sits 20 inches of water, you want that down 2.5 feet under the surface. Just so it's a little bit below, because they're literally laying within inches of the bottom of your boat.
Yeah, it's
but
pretty cool.
Very, very loose drag.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you have to set your drag loose. You either have to have a live liner type scenario, dual drag type reel, or really loosen up that drag.
Because what you want that fish to be able to do is grab it and start moving off with it. That way, when you see it going, you take it out of the rod holder, and you make sure he's not going all the way under the boat. If he is, you open the bail on it, loosen the drag up even more, and get the line so it's clear from underneath the vessel. If you just arbitrarily lock down on that fish, he's going the other way under the boat. You get no chance of landing that fish. But if you work the line either up to the bow or around the stern, up to the bow is my choice because there's no outboards to deal with. I just walk that rod right up there, feed it under the anchor line, pick it up. We've got no drag pressure on it. And then set up on that fish and start fighting him, and you'll probably land that fish. My adventures, Sean from American Fishing Wire and his wife Kathleen came down, and we started out doing business with American Fishing Wire AFW a number of years ago.
Yeah.
Met him at ICAST, you know, got along, and we've started out as a, you know, business thing, and it's turned from business into personal relationships. He's become an amazing part of the store. We're very lucky. So many of the manufacturers have become very personal friends. We get along so well with them. And we buy from these guys, and everything just works. It's great business and personal. And American Fishing Wire High Seas is just CNH Lures. He runs all those. But amazing people to deal with. So he came down. I wanted to take him and his wife out, do a little fishing, a little sightseeing, a little shelling, stop for lunch, have a nice day. kind of a trip I really enjoy nowadays, because I, you know, if it's me and Robert going out, we can hardcore fish all day. You know, we don't get much chance to do it, so we're going to go out, really kick butt fishing. But when you have somebody down who's never been to an island restaurant like Cabbage Key or the Torpon Lodges or one of those places you're going to get to by boat, you want to take them out there and show them and give them that Florida experience. I gave them a Florida experience, all right. I used to be pretty darn good with a boat. I say used to be. But considering the fact I was on a boat 6 to 7 days a week, anywhere from 5 to 14, 16 hours a day. I mean, I have years and years of standing on the decks of boats, if you add up all the hours. And I was, you know, I could do almost anything I ever wanted to in a boat. Well, I haven't done much in the last few years. I'm a bit rusty. I'm a bit rusty in judging waves.
How much of a bit rusty are you?
Well, we went up in Shell Creek to fish for some tarpon. If you're looking for tarpon right now, if you go up by Harbor Heights, enter into Shell Creek, go up there between there and the trestle, there's been tarpon there. And if they're not there, you go just upriver past Harbor Heights, stay in the left-hand channel, and go up by the power lines, those tarpon will be there. They'll be in one of the other spots. It was really foggy out. So we went up, fished for some tarpon. Sean hooked one, lost it. We caught a few catfish and said, all right, we're out of here. You know, I don't want to deal with those big catfish, too, by the way. I mean, these things were like 6 pounders. Big, big catfish. But I didn't feel like dealing with them. The tarpon weren't really on fire. So we head out, go down the river, and we end up just kind of following the fog all the way out to Boca Grande. Kind of went over by the Mayaca, showed them around down the west wall, showed them some of the sites, Turtle Bay, Bull Bay. Ended up going out to fish the phosphate dock. And I'm watching, nobody else is getting a hit. We got crabs down, we got shrimp down, and we're not getting a hit. So I just let the boat drift away from the phosphate dock and said, you know what, let's go out, we'll do a little fishing later. We're going to go out, hit Cayo Costa, and do a little shelling. So we get out in the Gulf, we go through Boca Grande Pass, we're headed south, and there's a little bit of a swell happening. Every once in a while, they're probably about 4 foot, 3 to 4 foot swells. They're not waves, they're just swells. But I can see waves breaking out where the sandbars start and all that. And I'm watching the island looking for a place where there's nobody around, because you can usually find on Cayo Costa, you have a group of people over there, and then you'll have a big stretch, and then there'll be another group of people. And if you kind of pick a spot in the middle, neither one really walks that far. So that's probably the only place you're actually going to find some shells or anything cool that you're going to see. So I found a spot like that. Beach looked pretty good, and what I'm looking for is a very sloping, gradual beach coming out, not one where the beach comes out and it drops off 2 or 3 feet. That's really tough to land a boat and get back out when you have any kind of waves breaking or anything. And so I went in there, and I'm putting the nose of the boat up so they can get off, and then I would back the boat away from the beach, and I've done this hundreds of times, no issues. What I didn't count on was I misjudged the bottom. It came off there and got probably 3 foot deep immediately. And what I didn't remember was the full moon, which makes the current tide much more vicious. It's a much stronger wave action, much stronger pull. And I go to put the nose up against the beach, and all of a sudden I felt the boat drop about 10 inches as the wave formed. You know how in a tsunami all the water pulls away from land and then the wave comes in? Well, this was a little 3 foot tsunami hit. It was only about 3 foot, but the back of my boat's only about 20 inches. So the boat dropped, and about 2 inches of the top of that wave came over the back of the boat. So now I got 4 inches of water in the boat. I'm like, go, get up, jump up, and I'm hitting reverse. And as I'm powering back to get away from the beach, because that's right where the danger spot is, 10, 12 feet out, no problem. But right there, problem. The motor, another wave started coming, the boat dropped, the prop hit the sand, the motor shut off. I knew I was dead. The first wave only had about 2 inches overlap over the back of my boat. The second and third wave was about a 10-inch overlap. So now I get about 8 inches of water all the way through the boat. I get the motor restarted, get the jack plate up, spinning it, put it in reverse. She is coming back, and I just feel a boat going to start to pull away from the shore. Boom! Wave hits me, and I'm on the bottom. My boat is sunk. I'm literally standing in the boat, and as the next preceding ones come, they wash everything out of the boat. The coolers, the tackle boxes, everything blows from the back of the boat, right over the bow, and out the front. The water has literally about, my entire boat is about 2 inches below the surface. Technically sunk, right? Well, then there's a little break. Jump out. I know I'm not going to back out of this. Go up, and Sean and I grab the nose of the boat, and we start spinning it around. Because as soon as you get the nose to the waves, you're good. Well, we get it all the way turned around, so the nose is facing out towards open water. And because it was full of water, the waves are coming over the bow, just flushing everything out. The really good news is all of the oak leaves and the muck and everything that was stuck in the bilge of my boat is now gone. It's all been cleaned out. And the water ran through the front hatches, which it blew the hatch lids off, out through the back hatches, and the motors, the bottom of the boat's really clean, except for about a half an inch of sand in the bottom of it, because all the sand was going in the boat. So anyway, we get the nose around there, and Sean's on one side, I'm on the other side. My wife, Terry, she's in the back with a bucket, 5 gallon bucketing the water out. His wife's on the other side in the back, 5 gallon bucket, getting water out of the boat. And a guy came by with a boat. And so he says, well, you know, you guys are in trouble. I said, yeah, we're in a little bit of trouble here. Give us a tow. So Sean swims out, grabs the guy's line. And the whole idea behind this is to tie it to my boat and tie it to the other boat. Well, I guess he was a little excited. He forgot to tie it to his boat. So he takes off. And I'm like, what? All right. So poor Sean, he's got to swim out there, get the line back up, get him back to him. Now, critical need-to-know information for you guys is if somebody's going to tow you or do whatever, never, ever, ever tie your boat to somebody else's. Tie a loop in the end of the line and loop it over a cleat. Because people, especially well-meaning people, can often cause you as much harm as good. You don't know. If we had two more people, we could have easily just pushed the boat out and no problem. So we get hooked up in the boat, and I'm going, just hold, give us a minute. And I said, when I tell you to, hit it. And what we were waiting for, the girls had gotten a bit of the water out, and Sean and I are holding the nose up. And I'm holding my hand up, we're holding the boat, and I saw the wave come, and I said, go, hit the boat. We push up, Sean, and the two of us lifted the front of the boat. The wave caught the front of the boat, dumped most of the water out of the back of the boat, and he popped it right up, she floated right off. No big deal. Just had to time that wave a little right. Then, all of a sudden I look, and he's made a left turn. He's going parallel down the shore. He's going to turn the boat sideways to the waves, which would swamp it. Now we'd be in 6 feet of water. The boat is not coming back up from there. Right now the boat has not been hurt at all. It's just been cleaned. The sand and the water have just cleaned the inside of my boat. It looked much nicer than when I started the day. So I wasn't worried about anything. But all of a sudden, the lines go that way. I had to jump up, grab the line, pull as hard as I could, get my knees against the boat, because he's trying to drag my boat, which is full of water, and his boat and everything. I got it up, took the loop off the cleat, threw it out, off it went. And from when the first wave hit the water until we were all back on the boat getting ready to leave was about 40 minutes, start to finish. But I did technically sink my boat. And it was one stupid mistake, one little misjudgment. But when you make the mistake, do not get upset. Don't get angry. Look at the problem. Figure the problem out. Problem was, stern's out, nose is in. Fix that. Get it around. Time the waves. Let the wave help you get some of the water out of the boat. The girls were doing an amazing job. They got it down just to where that wave could lift it up, get that last little bit out. He pulled. If we would have had two more guys, we could have done it by hand, but we just didn't have the extra help. timed that wave so the nose lifted up, water dumped out, and the boat just swam right out on its own. It was really mad at me. That boat wanted to be back up and running. It did not want to be sitting there getting beat to death on the bottom. If you leave the stern out, I've seen boats literally broken into pieces in less than an hour. All this, you got to get that boat turned around. You have a matter of minutes. We're not talking 20 minutes. We're talking a matter of minutes to turn that boat back, get the nose out. If you don't, the waves will literally break your boat into pieces. So it all worked out good. We knew what we had to do. We did it. Easy peasy. All done. So Sean has come down, and he's gone out fishing with all these guys. He said, poor days of fishing and great days of fishing, but I guarantee you he's never gone out, sunk a boat, brought it back up, took off, and spent the day cruising around on the boat the rest of the day. We actually were only about 5 minutes late for our lunch reservations. So that's what I did on my day off.
An amazing story.
And I can tell you, the next day, didn't feel bad. Today, back's a little stiff. It took 2 days for those muscles to start locking up.
Yeah, that's not fun, but
it was fun. It really was. It was exciting. It was an adventure.
The back stiff part and the body aches, but the coolest part is that you understand how to operate the boat and point it in the right direction to get it out of there, and that's the amazing part of having that knowledge and wisdom for as many years as you're doing it and have done it.
I'm not crediting any knowledge or wisdom. This was sheer stupidity got me there.
Well, we still screw up, which is...
I literally took it for granted that I could handle it, because I'd done so many times before.
I've done that trip with you a dozen times.
What's that?
I've done that trip with you a dozen times.
Yeah, I've dropped you and your family and everybody else on the beach.
Yeah,
I mean, but literally, all it took was... What I didn't count on was the suction of the wave off the beach dropping the boat down. That was shocking. When that boat dropped down and took that first wave, I knew I had seconds to do it, get it out. I didn't make it. I was done. That was work. Muscles! Okay, right. Getting into jacks. Big jacks.
Yeah.
What's going on with the big Jack Revels? I'm a big Jack. So tell me about other guys. No, tell me about another big Jack. Okay.
The jack fishing, I mean, I've had so many different reports from guys in the PGI canals.
RJ's looking at me like, you really would out sunk. His eyes are looking at me like, I don't believe that story.
I'm still reconsidering wanting to go fishing with you at this point.
Well, I've got years of hours on boats.
I'll wear a wetsuit, that's all.
Yeah, no, I mean, just bring a bathing suit. We'll be fine. We can go down and come back up. Amazing story is, we spent the rest of the day on that boat driving around.
Yep.
We drove out there with it, sunk it, drove it home.
Went to lunch and then drove it home.
Went to lunch and then drove it home, yeah.
So, literally, what better story you want? I don't care how many fishing trips you've got. You'll remember that day the rest
of
your
life.
That's
right, you will. You'll be telling that story for years.
Literally, some of the worst trips I've ever had are the ones I remember the most. And sinking a boat and driving home in it? Come on! Mm-hmm. That's awesome!
Well, let's go back to jacks, because that's probably jacks. My favorite fish to catch down here, a big jack.
There's been some giant jacks around lately, 10 to 20-pound fish.
Wow. And that's the equivalent of 50 pounds in any other fish.
At least, absolutely.
20 pounds of jack. Oh, yeah, I'm giving that a 60-pound amberjack.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, they're just amazing pound-for-pound fighting fish, but guys are catching them on mostly artificials, but they're trolling through the PGI canals and trolling the Rapala 10s. But a couple guys are actually throwing the bigger ones, Subwalk, the big Subwalk that the guys use for tarpon.
Oh, yeah, that big Rapala Subwalk.
Mm-hmm. And then they're throwing some of the giant spooks, like the super spooks, some of the big topwater stuff, and catching literally 10 to 20-pound fish. Guy got a 21-pound, 22-pound jack that he had a picture of on his boger grip, and they're catching them over there on the east wall too, just on the outside of the bar.
And did I catch some of them around. Were using topwaters?
Almost all of them were using I'd say about 50% of them were using topwaters. The other 50% are casting just lures.
Subwalks and skitter walks are probably the two most common ones for this. Skitter V's, skitter walks, and subwalks. That little subwalk, the mid-size one, is the one we were banging the tarpon on last spring.
Right.
So those, some reason or another, that subwalk, you work it just like you would walk the dog with a Zara Spook or a Skitter Walk or Skitter V or Top Pup, whatever. But you do it underwater, and you're popping that along. It's going side to side like that. And the jacks and the tarpon are really seeming to pick up on this.
Absolutely. It's been pretty impressive with those fish out there. You know, you got to work at it, and you've got to cover a lot of ground. But
that's the one thing I don't like about it. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
When you're walking the dog with a topwater, it's tough. When you start walking the dog with a subwalk, that takes a bit of energy.
It does.
To do that hour after hour after hour.
It does, but
I'm going to have another lure with me, so I don't have to just throw that one all day.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'd probably be more partial to throwing, like, say, the X-Wrap 10 or even something a little bit larger, but just a small lip bait that I can work a little slower under the water and not have to work hard at getting the action out of it. But it's worth checking it out and fishing the entrances to all the PGI canals, going up into the PGI canals, or working your way down along the east side. Now, that's not to say that they're not over on the west wall or over at the El Jobin Bridge, because I've caught plenty of big jacks there around that bridge, but I just haven't heard of any over there right now. But these jacks are really quality fish. These are like East Coast off-the-beaches jacks. They're pretty impressive.
Now, speaking of off-the-beaches, the Gulf of Mexico right now is, outside of being mad at me and sinking my boat, the Gulf out there has been awesome. There's been cobia,
lane snapper.
You want to say cobia again? Okay. I thought we were just doing cobia.
There's been a few barracuda out there. I mean, there's been the whole gamut going on. I mean, this week the water temperature's come up probably.
Amberjacks, yes or no?
Yes, 30 miles out.
Permit.
A few, but very few.
Pompano.
Nope.
Spanish mackerel.
A few, but I'm hearing more reports of Spanish north, up towards North Venice, all the way up into Sarasota.
King mackerel.
None.
All right. How the yellowtail? Now I know we had a great yellowtail bite going on.
Still going on out there. Guys out there in 15 to 30 miles out, basically 50 feet to 100 feet, are catching yellowtails. The key thing is chum. You got to hang a chum bag over the side if you really want numbers of yellowtail quality.
I was talking to James at Boca Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Boca Coast is a chum, and James is the one who invented it. And they sell it for whitebait.
Uh-huh.
What I want to try is getting it in some kind of container that I can get it down to the bottom and, like, dump out a bit of it. Because his chum, part of it will stay on the bottom, and the other part goes up to the surface.
Floats
it
up,
bubbles up.
Yeah.
So when you throw it out in the flats, you've got some of the chum down there in the water, and you've got this column that's bubbling up at the surface. Now, that's got to be awesome on yellowtails.
Oh, I would think it would work very well.
Have you ever seen his chum work?
No, I haven't, but I can see what you're saying, and that makes a huge difference, because what you're getting now is you're getting the whole water column full of chum.
A lot
of times when you chum on the surface, you know, the surface may be moving in a different direction than the water underneath you, and maybe it doesn't penetrate down more than a couple of feet.
Yeah, it gets blown off if you've got the chum up by the top.
But if you can get it down to the bottom, some of the old guys used to use canned catfish, cat food.
Cat food, yeah.
And they punch a hole through it and drop it down to the bottom on a line.
Yeah.
And that kind of did the same thing, because you could see the oils coming up from the cat food.
What I was thinking is if you could put, like, get a PVC with a screw cap on it, mm-hmm. drill a hole in it, like a half-inch, three-quarter-inch hole or something, maybe all the way through, and then put a line on it, weight in the bottom of it, like put a bunch of lead in the bottom of it, mm-hmm. put a screw cap on it, and then drop that down to the bottom where you had those holes on the side of it where you could, like, shake it out.
Right.
And shake it a little bit while it's sitting on the bottom. It's going to dust some out the sides. And then that more of that is going to start bubbling up. And it would take that stuff all the way back up to the surface. So, I mean, I'm talking about a 2-inch piece of PVC or 3-inch. Something you can actually put some chum in, like 5 pounds or 10 pounds.
Something that's going to hold it.
Yeah, something that's going to go for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to drop it down and then have it disappear in 2 minutes.
Exactly. I mean, so what I'm thinking is if we could figure out some way of doing it. Now, we don't know this is going to work. If this Boca Chum, it would work for this or not. We use it on white bait all the time. But to think about it on the reef for yellowtail or permit or amberjack, where you could be chumming the bottom and having this stuff rise all the way back up to the surface, it's got to be interesting.
I would think that you're going to attract far more species of fish to that chum line than just hanging a bag off the back of the boat.
Especially where it's going, you know, boiling from the bottom all the way to the top. I was actually talking to James about this the other day. And, you know, he says, well, we can't figure out what to put it in. Therein is the whole thing that's slowing everything down. What do you put it in to get it to go all the way to the bottom, make a little chum thing there, and then be able to, you know,
well,
lift
instead
itself
of a,
back
instead of a
up.
PVC pipe, probably a copper pipe.
Yeah, something.
Copper pipe with screw ends on it. That would work.
So, anyway, this is what we think about. You know, we talk to each other about our products and whatever else. But we were talking about yellowtail snapper. The bite's been awesome out there in about 60 feet average water in almost all the reefs. What's the best bait for them?
Shrimp.
Shrimp's been
obviously
the best bait.
Obviously, shrimp's the best bait. And they're catching them 2 to 4 pounds. These are nice yellowtails. These
bigger
are
than you find in the
guys.
Keys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these are very quality fish. You may not get dozens of them, but every one you're going to catch is going to be 2 to 4 pounds. I mean, they're quality fish. Chum is the main thing. And
all right, let's go on to the lane snappers. What are the lane snappers doing? How close are they?
They're catching better numbers of them in about 50 feet of water, but they're still catching them even in 30 feet of water. But 50 to 80 feet seems to be kind of the magic number for the better quality size ones. The, you know, the 1.5 to 2.5 pounders. Good size fish. And they're catching them on shrimp, squid, and cut pieces of bait fish.
All right. One of the things everybody's always talking about, red grouper. What's going on with red grouper?
75 to 100 feet of water, honestly. And it just depends on the person. There's no rhyme or reason to it at all still. They're catching some good quality fish up to 25, 28 inches.
Squirrel fish,
all of it.
Squid,
all
whatever you can get down there, big chunks.
Yep, all of it seems to be the thing. And one guy does great on squid, and another two guys did great on squirrel fish.
All right, sea trout, they just came up with a new ordinance on the sea trout. You're still allowed 4 a day from what we understand, but you cannot have a fish. Your sea trout at this point have to be more than 15 inches and less than 20 inches. If you've got a sea trout before, you could have 4. 3 of them more than 15, less than 20, and 1 as big as you wanted over, you know, could be any size as long as it's over 15 inches. But now, no fish, if it's 20 inches on a sea trout, you must turn it loose. So that means 19 7/8 is legal. 20 is not.
Correct.
So it has to be more than 15 and less than 20. As we understand it, you're still allowed 4 per day. But this is more of these captains for this and save the that and all this. They're all, you know, yapping about all the fish. And quit donating money to groups, guys. You know, they're causing more problems than they're worth, whether it's got seas in the name or save the in the name or for the in the name. Yeah, they're all becoming problems. But, so that's on hold now until May 10th. Now, the problem with all this is the BS is flying far and fast. So they're saying no trout over 20 inches. Now, it doesn't have anything to do with they had a very poor mullet run, and the commercial industry, sea trout, are not a game fish. The commercial guys can catch sea trout by the tons.
Yeah.
But that has nothing to do with the recreational bag limit. It's just the red tide killed them. So, anyway, sea trout, 15, more than 15, less than 20 for the next bit. Fishing Frank here, but that's a new thing just happened. We'll let you know when that changes. Right now, don't keep a big sea trout under 20. Robert in the chair across from me. RJ in the control center trying to control this. Fishing Frank here, sunk boat and all. Sinker and line. I
said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to eat.